thank you again for the opportunity to come visit with everyone here. And what I will be sharing tonight is just simply a story that I believe will be an inspiration and motivation to everyone here tonight. I am a local here to Washington State, to the Pierce County region. I grew up here in the Puyallup area. And when I was growing up, I was in a lot of trouble. I had been kicked out of every school that I went to by the ages of 12 to 15. There was no longer any bus I could get on. All the bus drivers didn't want me. I had been kicked out of the different junior high schools. And the last school I was in was in Spanaway Lake High School. The last time I was in class, I remember the teacher became so angry, she ran over to the wall, picked up the phone and called guess who? Guess who the teacher called? She called the police. The police came into the high school, into the classroom, and took me away. It was the Pierce County Sheriff's. So that was my last time in school. And at this time in my life, I was really bothered by something. It was very simple. My outlook on life is that we are all going to die. I'm going to die. You're going to die. We are all going to die. And I realized if we're all going to die, if the end of life is death, then it doesn't really matter how we lived. I would ask my teachers and counselors and parents, why should I go to school? So that you can get good grades and go to college. But why do I want to go to college? So that you can get a good job and do whatever you want in life. But why? So that you can make money and live however you want. I said, yeah, but what happens in the end? In the end of life, what happens to all of us? They said, oh, you're just going to die. And I thought, this is so dumb, this is so foolish, this is so meaningless. If death is the end, there's no purpose, there's no meaning, there's nothing. So it doesn't really matter how I live. Not only was I thinking that, but I had two brothers. I had an older brother who died at the age of 9 from cerebral palsy. So his whole life he could never talk or walk. He lived his life in a wheelchair. He died at the age of 9. I had a younger brother who started to make bad decisions as well, and he committed suicide at the age of 13. So here I was looking, life's not fair, we're all going to die. You're not even guaranteed to live a long life. You could die when you're young, you could die from sickness, you could die from suicide. There's no meaning, it doesn't matter. And I decided at a very young age, if we're only going to live one time, we should live our lives for something 100%. We should go all the way. And so I decided, since I'm always in trouble and I'm always getting kicked out of school, I'm going to be 100% bad. I want to be 100% evil. I want to be as evil as you possibly can be, because it doesn't really matter. We're only going to live one time. So I started to get into a lot of trouble, and I started to use as many drugs as I could use, as drink as much alcohol as I could use. It just didn't make sense to drink one drink or to use drugs just one time. The goal was to use so many drugs that you became completely powerless over even your own self, and you just couldn't function. It just didn't matter. Just take all these drugs. And so, but I realized that drugs, the problem with drugs is that you can get very, very high and you feel very, very good, but then you come back down and the problem remains. In fact, it's worse when you come down off your high. And so I realized drugs are kind of stupid. And so I was really just a total mess. And at that time, my parents and teachers and counselors, they sent me to an institution called Fairfax. Have you heard of it? It's a mental institution. And I went there, and I was only there one day. As soon as they locked me in that room and said, you're going to stay here, we're going to tell you what to do, and this, you're going to obey our orders, I attacked the staff, and I said, I'm not obeying anyone, and I refused to comply. And the next day, they let me out of the mental institution. And I realized at that point, this was in the year 1995, I was 15 years old, I realized, you know what, it's 100%, I'm as bad as I can be. And I started to commit crime after crime, and it got worse and worse. And just to give you one story to kind of illustrate what I was doing at a young age, it was 1995, and I had just turned 16 years old. And we went out one night, and I was driving a car, and in my car, three men. And these three men had guns. And we drove out at night, and we were driving just in the Puget Sound area, Tacoma, Puget Sound, and we drove up to a store. The men got out of my car, went into the store, and they robbed the store at gunpoint. Came out of the store, jumped in my car, and said, go, go, go. So I put on the gas. We drove down the road just two blocks, came to another store. They walked into the store. They were robbing the store. And I was sitting out there in my car waiting, you know, every second, you know, just seems like eternity. And it was taking a long time, longer than usual. And all of a sudden, I heard, wah, 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 it's the alarms. And the three guys with guns, they come running out of the store. They jump in my car and they start yelling, go, go, go. And so I pushed on the gas. I'm driving down the road just over here in Tacoma. And in the distance, I can see coming towards me the red and blue lights. Guess who's coming? Again, yes, it's the police. Here comes the police, closer and closer and closer. And as the police are approaching, the men in my car, they get the guns ready. We're going to shoot the police. Why? There's no hope. It doesn't matter how we live. We're all going to die. It doesn't matter. So here comes the police, closer, 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 and then the police drive by. They were looking for three men. Those police didn't know that those three men were in my car. So we kept on driving. I turned to the three men in my car and said, "Hey, I have a great idea." They said, "What?" I said, "Let's go rob another store." They said, "What? Are you crazy?" I said, "No, the police just went that way. We can go this way, the opposite way, and go rob another store because there's no police." So sure enough, we drove down the road totally at random. The first store we saw, we stopped. They went in and robbed the store, and we went home that night. I was 16 years old, and we were doing this here in Pierce County, Spanaway, Puyallup, lower Seattle, Tacoma area, 3 to 4 times a week. We didn't care. Just a few weeks after that, we got this great idea. We thought, you know what, let's go rob some drug dealers because they have the money and the drugs and they have all this, they have all the things that they want. And we thought, how are we going to rob some drug dealers? And we thought, we got a great idea. We thought, what is the only day of the year? It's the only night of a year that someone in North America will open their door at night to a stranger with a mask on. What day is that? Halloween. So we dressed up in Halloween masks. I didn't dress up because I was the driver. I was the getaway driver. We drove out that night and we went and robbed all these different drug dealers and different people. Some people at random, some people were drug dealers. And we, after we robbed all these houses that night, we were crossing Pacific Avenue and all of a sudden the police cars just out of nowhere materialized and came and surrounded my car and they arrested us and they took us to the jail. And I remember at the age of 16 years old, they took us to this place just not even, I think, a mile from this church. Can you tell me what place that is? Raymond Hall. Yes, the juvenile detention center. Not even, a mile or two from this church. And they took us over here. And the next day, the Pierce County Sheriffs came and they cuffed us up and they said, "You're leaving." And we said, "Where are we going?" They said, "You're going to the adult county jail." This was the mid-1990s when they decided to start trying violent juveniles as an adult. And there I was in the jail, in the cell. They took us into the courtroom. I'm wearing the orange prisoner pumpkin suit. Maybe you've seen that on television or in the news before. I'm chained at the waist. I'm chained at the ankles. And I'm chained to the other prisoners next to me. We walk into the superior court, we sit down, and the judge starts reading off the charges for each person. Says, "Ma'am, you're here for driving while being intoxicated, one count." And then the judge looked at me, he said, "Andrew Michelle," he said, "I know you're only 16 years old, but if you want to commit crimes like an adult, we're going to treat you like an adult." He said, "I'm charging you with kidnapping in the first degree, count one. Kidnapping in the first degree, count two." And he's reading all these charges. And he reads all these charges off robbery, kidnapping. And after he gets finished, the courtroom is silent. And everyone's looking at this 16-year-old kid. And the prisoner next to me, he turns and says, he says, "Do you know how serious that is?" I said, "What?" He said, "Murder is the most serious crime that you can commit. The second most serious crime is first degree kidnapping. With two kidnappings, you can go to prison for 50 years. You just got charged with 7 kidnappings and armed robberies in the first degree." He said, "Do you know what that means?" He said, "You're going to prison for life and you will die in the prison. You will never be free." I had no idea that the decisions and the choices that we make when we are young can change our entire life. It's the decisions that we make when we are just young and growing up that, and not having biblical wisdom, we make these bad decisions and it ruins our entire life, these choices that we make in a moment or even one night. Because I was 16 years old, they put me in what's called solitary confinement. So I was put in a cell all by myself, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in a cell like this, but just had one bunk there, as you can see the picture on the slide. And there I sat there thinking, you know what? I'm 16 years old. My life is done. I'm going to die in prison. It's over. It's over. And just as an explanation, the reason that they charged us with the kidnapping charges is because many people think we tied up these people, took them out of their homes, put them in the trunk of our car, and drove off into the jungle. But according to the law, kidnapping can happen. If I come into your home with a weapon and I say you cannot move from point A to point B, that is by the law the technical legal definition of kidnapping. And the police knew we were guilty of all these other past crimes, and they wanted to give us as many charges as possible, so they gave us 7 kidnappings. So that explains the kidnapping charges. So I'm sitting there in solitary, I'm sitting there by myself, just thinking, you know, my life is over, it's done, I'm never going to be free, this is where I will die. But a few days later, a prisoner was walking by my cell. It was some gang member here from the Hilltop, and he looked in the window of my cell, and he said, "Hey, young man, do you want something to read?" I said, "Sure." So he opened the little slot on the door where they would slide in that really yummy prisoner food. It's not really yummy, but they would slide in the prisoner food. Well, he gave me a book. Can anyone here tonight guess what book he gave me? He gave me the Bible. And so he gives me the Bible, and I look at the Bible, and I think, oh, the Bible, the Bible. Yes, I remember years ago, a teacher in school, he had showed a movie called The Ten Commandments, but I was so high on drugs, and my mind was such a fog, and I was in so much trouble, I can't remember anything from the movie, except that the Ten Commandments are in the Bible. That's all I knew about the Bible. So I ran out to the door, and I yelled between the crack and the wall of the door. That's how we communicated. So I yelled to the other prisoner, I said, "Hey, the Bible that you gave me, does it have the Ten Commandments?" And so he came to his cell door and he yelled back to me, "Yeah, it does." I said, "Where are they?" He said, "Oh, I think they're in the front somewhere." So he wasn't very helpful. He didn't know what to do. So I didn't know what to do. So I took my Bible completely at random. A lot of people do this. And I just opened it to the middle and I began reading the first thing that my eyes fell upon. Now, can you guess the first thing that I read in the Bible? I hope you have your Bible with you. If you have one near you, pick it up, or you can look in your friend's Bible. I opened it to Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. And Proverbs is, the beginning part of Proverbs is written by King Solomon. And you will notice in verse 8 and verse 10 that King Solomon is specifically addressing young people. He says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father," verse 8. And in verse 10, again, he says, "My son." Now, I'll be reading from the King James, but I'm actually going to paraphrase it a little bit because the version that I was reading at the time was a little different version. But you'll notice in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10, I start reading. Now, imagine this is the first thing you ever read in the Bible, and you're in jail for kidnapping and robbery. This is the first thing that you read. Verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Verse 11, "If they say, 'Come with us, let's lay wait for blood, let's lurk privily, let's hide for these people so they can rob the innocent people without cause.'" Verse 12, "We'll swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit." Verse 13, "We will find all types of precious substance. We will fill our houses with spoil." Verse 14, "Cast in your lot with us. Come with us. Let's all have one purse." He continues through the next few verses, giving advice to young people not to go out with other people and commit these crimes of violence, robbery, and kidnapping. The first thing that I read in the Bible is, don't do what you just did. Now, when I began to read these things, I was so convicted. I experienced this tremendous wave of condemnation and guilt, but I'm in solitary confinement. There's no one talking to me. I'm only reading the Bible, only reading Proverbs. Where's all this guilt and conviction coming from? I begin to think of all my past crimes. I begin to feel so terrible that I've hurt so many people and robbed from so many people. I can remember yelling one night at my mother and father and saying, "Mom, I hate you. Dad, I hate you. And if I could kill you, I would kill you. I hated my parents. I hated this world. I hated this life." And here I begin to read the Bible and I just instantly feel so convicted. Maybe you think the Bible has good news. Maybe you think the Bible brings people peace. Well, let your eyes drop down to verse 27 and verse 28. It says, "When fear comes to your life like a desolation and destruction comes as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you," verse 28, "then they will call upon me, but I will" what? "I will not answer. They will seek me early, but they will not find me. And so here was this tremendous wave of condemnation and guilt. I felt so terrible. And now I read that in this distress, my life is ruined, kidnapped and robbed. I'm going to die in prison. I can call out to God. No hope, no answer, nothing. It's totally over. The door has been shut forever. And I felt so terrible. But something about this Bible had a power in itself. Something about this Bible was gripping my mind and heart. I could not stop reading it. I just kept reading it. Even though I didn't understand everything I was reading, I would sit on the bed, that little cot in the prison cell, and I would hold the Bible out and away from me as I was reading, because I was crying so much. There was a puddle of tears there on the floor. Well, I thank God I didn't spend time reading the whole entire Old Testament. I flipped through one day and I found the book of Matthew. And I thought, the book of Matthew, who is Matthew and what's Matthew writing about? Well, I found out that Matthew was writing about someone that he had met, and he was writing about that person's life. Who is that person? It was Jesus. And as I start reading through the book of Matthew, what I'm learning about Jesus is totally different than what I've ever learned before. I grew up thinking Jesus was related to the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus, but what I read in Matthew was radically different. Matthew was explaining and telling people these prophecies, which had been written for thousands of years, all pointed forward to this Messiah, to this Jesus, and they're being fulfilled before our eyes. And so this was so exciting and tremendous and wonderful for Matthew, and he wrote about all these things, and I was reading these things in a jail cell, and it was so exciting. I'll go to a story that was probably the most moving. It's in Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19, there's a story that many of you are familiar with. It's the story of the rich young ruler. Are you familiar with this story? Again, it's a young person. Now, the story starts in verse 21. It starts in verse 16. I'm going to summarize it for the sake of time tonight. In this story, in verse 16, again, here's a young person that comes up to Jesus, and he wants to follow Jesus. And Jesus turns to him, and the young man says, "What do I need to do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus says, "You need to do all these things." And he says in his mind, notice his response. He says in verse 20, he says, "I have kept all these things from my youth. What do I lack?" So in this young person's mind, he believes, "I'm following God 100%. My entire life is committed 100% to God. What do I lack? What do I lack?" But Jesus knows his life very well. And he knows that he has committed a great percentage of his life to God. But there's still just one percentage of his life that he hasn't surrendered. He says in verse 21, he says, "If you want to be perfect, if you want to give 100%, go sell everything that you have and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me." Now, if you stop right there, you would think, mathematically, having given 99% of his life, how much easier it would be to just go one more percent. I mean, doesn't that mathematically just make so much sense? After 99 steps, one more step, and that's it. That's all you have to do. But it was so amazing. I was so struck by this as I was reading this in the jail cell. Verse 22, when he hears these things, he becomes sad. He becomes sorrowful, and he turns away because he had great possessions. And then Jesus and the disciples respond to the situation. The disciples are amazed. They cannot believe what they have just seen. They have just seen a man who thought he had committed 100%, only committed 99%, and he turns and walks away from an opportunity to invest in heaven forever and ever. And then I read in that jail cell, I read these verses that gave me so much hope. Verse 25, the disciples are amazed. They say to Jesus, "Who then can be saved?" Verse 26, but Jesus beheld them and he said unto them, "With men this is impossible, but with God all things are" what? "All things are possible." Now, I've been kicked out of school. I'm a high school dropout, drug addict, felon. I'm in a jail cell. I don't know anything about the Bible. But when I read that all things are possible with God, I began to have hope. And I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know anything about prayer. But I was reading in the Bible that when people would ask God to come into their life and change their life, when they prayed, God would answer them. And so I didn't know what to do. I just was there in the jail cell, Pierce County Jail. I knelt down on the floor and I prayed. And all I knew how to say was, "God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I've completely ruined my life. But if it's possible, can you please help me? Will you please change my life?" Do you think God can hear a prayer from someone like that who's gone so far and made so many terrible decisions? Do you think so? I can tell you, standing here today, looking back to that moment, that was about November of 1995, the very moment I knelt on the floor and prayed and sought God's help, God began to change my life. God began to, my whole life, my whole mind, all my desires, everything began to change. I no longer wanted to be bad. I now wanted to do what was good. I no longer wanted to be evil. And I didn't want to be just mediocre either, or 50%. I wanted to live 100% for God. I was reading these stories in here like Daniel and Matthew and Peter and Paul and Hannah and Anna and Ezekiel and Jeremiah, Isaiah, and all these people in the Bible who committed their lives 100% for God. And whether pain or pleasure, whatever God gave them, wherever they went, they decided to live 100% for God. And so I decided, if I'm going to continue to live in this life, whether in prison or out, I want to live for God. Well, I continued to pray. I loved praying. I didn't have anyone in there to talk to, of course, in the cell. And so I just spent time every day reading the Bible. And as I read the Bible, it began to change my life. And I loved prayer. I just loved praying. And of course, I prayed a prayer that all prisoners pray. God, please don't let me go to prison. Please let me out. All prisoners pray that. And I prayed that. Do you think God answered the prayer exactly the way I wanted him to? Well, I went to the courtroom a few months later. I walked in. The judge looked at me. He said, I'm going to give you the shortest sentence I can give you. I'm going to send you to the adult prison for 13 years. Now, 13 years may seem like a long time to you, but it's a lot shorter to life. And I'm grateful for the 13. If that's the only option, I'm grateful for that. Because I was so young, they kept me in solitary confinement, in the hole. The prisoners called it the hole. Can you guess how long they kept me in there for? They kept me in the hole for 2 years. 2 years in that cell. I never left. And do you know that those 2 years, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in a prison cell, were the best years of my life, and I wouldn't trade them for anything. Do you know why? Number one, that was 2 years of spending uninterrupted, undistracted time reading God's Bible. And the more time I spent reading the Bible, the more it began to change my life. I loved those 2 years. And not only did reading the Bible change my life, but I was so convicted by God. Andrew, even though you're in prison, don't waste even 1 second of time. Don't waste even a second. Go to school. Study, because I've given you a brain. A brain. I realized reading the Bible that the brain is the most valuable possession that we have, and we must use it. We must tax it. We can't let it go to waste. So I prayed, God, how can I use my brain? How can I go to school? So I started requesting books. And you know, the prison administration sent a teacher down to my cell and said, you know, in the adult prison system, you can't get your high school diploma, but you can in the juvenile system. So if you want to, we're going to let you complete your high school diploma. Would you like to do that? I said, yes. So 10 months later, the teacher, this is what he said. He said, I went down to Andrew's cell. I gave him all the books and homework. The next day, he gave them all back to me. And I thought, he doesn't want to do it. But I looked and it was all completed. So I gave him more books and homework. And the next day, he gave it all back. Because I had no Facebook, no girlfriend, no cell phone, no internet, nothing but to sit there and study all day long, I completed 3 years of high school in just 10 months and got a 3.7 GPA. So the class clown and the drug addict and the kid that got kicked out of school and went to prison at 16 graduated with better grades before everyone else who was still in school. And because I was being faithful with the small opportunities that God gave me, the prison administration came down to my cell and they gave me this little radio. It was a Walkman radio that played the cassette tapes. Many of you maybe remember those. And I would go to the window in my cell, like you'll see in the picture, that little window in a prison cell. And I would put the little radio up there and I tuned in and I found a Christian radio station. I tuned in and I thought, wow, this is so amazing. I was hearing all these sermons. I was hearing all of these songs. And just the idea that people would come together in the free world. They're not in prison, but they would come together to read the Bible, to pray, to talk about Jesus was so fantastic and wonderful to me. I thought, wow, is this so amazing? Why would people do that? But it was so incredible. And everything I was learning was so great. I could have heard the same sermon 500 times. It was just so wonderful to hear all these things. Every Sunday night, my favorite program would come on called Bible Answers Live with Doug Batchelor, Amazing Facts. And it was a Seventh-day Adventist radio station. And I thought, I don't know who these Adventists are, but he would talk about the Sabbath and the state of the dead and what happens when we die. It's a rest, but Jesus is going to come back. He's going to resurrect all the people who trust in him. And he said, you know, this wonderful news is going to go to the entire world, the Hindus, the Buddhists, the Muslims, everyone in the world. God intends that all people should hear this good news. And we are living at this very precious, important time in history. And I thought, wow, I don't know who these Adventists are, but they love reading the Bible. I hope that one day when I get out of prison, I can meet some Seventh-day Adventists. Several other things that happened there in solitary. Not only did reading the Bible change my life, but also began to change the lives of the people around me. After a while in prison, my mother and father came to the prison to visit me. And I remember what they would do. The guards would come to my cell. They would cuff me up on the ankles and in the waist. And they would shuffle me down the hallway down to this little visit room. And there was a little steel table in front of me. I would sit on a steel stool. And there was a bulletproof glass window in front of me. And my parents were on one side and I was on the other. And I was talking to them on a phone. Maybe you've seen this in movies or in the news. And so I'm talking to my mother and father. But it was not until I lost everything in my life. That's when I realized the value of our family. And so I was looking at my mom for the first time, and I looked at my dad for the first time, and I said, Dad, I love you. I looked at my mom for the first time in my life. I said, Mom, I love you. I never said that to my parents ever until I lost everything. And for me, it was too late. But God gave me this opportunity to look at them, and I really appreciated what they had, how much they had tried to be good parents. And of course, my parents cried for a while, but after a while, my dad, you know, he picked up the phone. He said, you know what? We're so happy to see what's going on in your life. You know, you're reading the Bible. You're changing. Your attitude is changing. Your conversation is, you don't swear anymore. You're going to school. You're accomplishing so much, even in solitary. They were so glad my mom sent me a newer Bible, an easier to read version. She said, you know, so you're like a brand new son. We're so happy that even though you're in prison, your life is changing. So not only did God change my life, but he began to change the lives around me. And not only my family, but also the other prisoners. I only knew so little of the Bible. I knew just a little bit, but it was the little that I knew that I wanted to share with other people. And so I yelled out to the other prisoners. I said, hey, do you guys want to study the Bible with me? Do you know what they yelled back? They said, no, we don't want to study. Keep Jesus to yourself. But they said, hey, there is another prisoner who's also studying the Bible, but you can't share with him because he's on the second floor of the prison. But there's a floor between us, so you can't communicate to him. Well, the people in prison, they have a lot of time on their hands, so they think of ways to get around the rules. But they said there's a secret way to communicate to the prisoner upstairs. And they taught me the secret way. Do you want to know the secret way? Are you sure? Okay, I'm going to tell you. You said I could, so I'm going to tell you. The prisoner said, you need to go over to the bed in your cell and get that little plastic pillow that 1,000 people slept on before you. You need to get that pillow and walk over and put it on the toilet seat. Okay, you're putting your pillow on the toilet seat. You need to press down and create a seal. Now, once you create a seal, you press up and down on the pillow pushes the air, and the air pushes the water out of the toilet. So you pump the water out of the toilet with your pillow, okay? Now, I climb up onto the sink, and I bang 4 times on the ceiling. That's the secret code. He knows what that means. The prisoner upstairs, he takes his pillow, puts it on his toilet, he pumps up and down, and now he pumps the water out of his toilet. Now the pipes between my toilet and his toilet on the second floor are empty. If you had walked by my cell at that moment, you would have seen me kneeling on the ground with my face in the toilet. And I yelled into the toilet. I said, hey, I said, can you hear me? And I listened. And I heard, yeah, I can hear you. I said, hey, I'm studying the Bible down here. Can we study the Bible together? He said, sure. So God answered my prayer and provided a Bible study through the toilet. Isn't that a wonderful toilet testimony? You know, when I realize this, I think, you know, what it must have been like for Jesus, who lived in the infinite purity and infinite bliss and joy and peace of heaven, to come down to this universe, infinite humiliation, to come down and live in the toilet bowl of the universe, this place of sin. Why? So that he can understand your life, so that he can understand our suffering. When you pray, he knows what you're going through. He chose to humiliate himself. I like to ask the question, would you humiliate yourself? And would you put your face in a toilet and do a Bible study through a toilet if you knew that doing so would give someone else hope for eternity and want to change their life and know Jesus? Would you do that? Would you still do that? Would you still kneel down and put your face in the toilet and give a Bible study to someone, even if you knew that they would listen to you and they would reject it and they would not accept that message? Would you still do it? Jesus would. Jesus did. That's what's so amazing. At the age of 18, my birthday present, they let me out of the hole and they took me to the adult prison. Here's a picture of me at the age of 18. I just got released from solitary confinement. I didn't get many haircuts there in solitary. And so this is the ugliest picture that I have of me. So I'm going to remove that picture. That was just there for a second. So at the age of 18, I went to the adult prison, and there were many, many years that went by, but one of the first things that happened when I went to the adult prison, my mind had been so clear from 2 years of no distraction. It was like a laser beam. My focus was so clear, and I knew as soon as I get to the prison, I should run right to the library and to the law library and to the school and study, learn everything that I could. Don't waste any time. And I remember one day I was reading the newspaper. It was the Tacoma News. I think it was the News Tribune, and there was a story of a young boy it was the Pierce County Herald. There was a story of a boy who was playing in his backyard. And he was playing in his backyard. He climbed up the fence and fell over the fence into the neighbor's yard. Big problem. The neighbor has big Rottweiler dogs. They jump on the boy, attack him, and do serious damage to his face. And they said that he's going to need plastic surgery to put his face back together again. And I read that the family was very poor, and if you wanted to donate to help medical costs, you could help them. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm 18 years old. I'm in prison. The food's not very good, but I have food. I have clothing. I have so many things to be thankful for, even though I'm in the prison. Here's a young boy whose life is ruined. He hasn't done anything wrong, and his life is ruined. And I had so little money. I mean, I was working for 26 cents an hour. It's really hard to save up and buy stuff at 26 cents an hour. But I remember thinking, you know what? And so I sat down, and I wrote out this request slip. And a few days later, a guard came to my cell with the carbon copy of that request slip. It was a receipt. They took about $8 off my account, and they sent it to the boy. And I thought, I was no dummy. I knew that $8 can't cover much. Maybe it could only buy a candy bar or a balloon or a sticker. But I remember I sent it to the boy to do what I could. And I remember standing there in my cell thinking, and I thought, you know what? I'm in jail for robbery. I'm in jail for kidnapping. And my whole life, all I've done is take and steal and rob other people. And I remember thinking, this is the first time in my life I've ever given to someone. I've never done it. This is the first time ever. And I remember feeling it was so good. It felt so good to give. I wanted to keep giving. This was a high. It was a drug for me from which there was no coming down. I remember thinking, you know what? I can die right now, and at least there's one good deed on my account. This was so wonderful. And so the time continued to go by, many, many, many years. From time to time, the older prisoners would come up and talk to me, and they would say, hey, Mitchell. Now, as you may remember, I was introduced. My name is Andrew Michelle. My last name is Michelle, like the name of a girl. But in prison and even out of prison, people sometimes mispronounce it and call me Mitchell. Well, when I was in prison and they called me Mitchell, I did not correct them because I didn't want to spend 13 years in prison being called Michelle. That would have made life a little bit more difficult. We should be wise and avoid those unnecessary difficulties. So they said, hey, Mitchell. I said, yes. They said, is it true you came to the prison when you were only 16? I said, yes. They said, is it true you spent 2 years in the hole? I said, yes, because you might go to the hole for 15 or 30 days for a fight or using drugs. But I was in there for 2 years. So they thought maybe I was a little crazy. And I said, no. They said, you were in there for 2 years? I said, yes. They said, you know, in prison you can't hide. We see everything from 7 in the morning until 9 at night. All you do is study. You go to the school. You go to the law library. You're taking welding classes, business classes, computer classes. You're studying law books. You're always reading. Sometimes we walk by your cell and you're asleep in a book. And one prisoner, he came up to me. He said, you know what? He said, I walked by your cell. I had to go to the bathroom early, and I walked by your cell. I looked in. It was like 4 in the morning. You were kneeling on the ground. What were you doing? I said, you know what? I was praying. He said, you were what? I said, I was praying. He said, you know, your life is so different from the other prisoners. All the other prisoners use drugs. You don't use drugs. All the other prisoners get tattoos. You've been in prison now for 8 years. You don't even have one tattoo. They said, all the other prisoners gamble, but you don't gamble. Why is your life so different? And I told them the same thing I will tell you tonight. All I did was pick up this book, and I would just open it. and I would just read from it. That's it. And then when I read from it, I would then pray about what I was reading. That's all I did every morning. For me, the hardest part about being in prison, I needed time in this Bible, not just 5 minutes, not just 20 minutes. I needed time in this Bible so that the Bible could change me. I needed it, not for tomorrow, but for today. Every day I needed this Bible. And it was so hard to find that time in prison. So I would get up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, turn on that little light and try to get those minutes in that I could reading the Bible. Well, the prisoners, they said, you know, after you get out of prison, you'll have been in prison for 13 years. What are you going to do when you get out of prison? I said, you know what? I don't know what I'm going to do when I get out. I've been in prison for so long. I don't remember what it's like to be free. I've grown up in prison. This is all I know. But I dream of what it's like to be free because I know how I want to live. I want to live a life of service. I realized in prison, the only thing that we can do with our life is give it away. You must give everything in your life away. Why not giving your life away in service to other people? I remember reading in the journal of a missionary one time, Jim Elliott. He wrote in his journal, he said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." And he lived his life in selfless service to others that they could know about Jesus. And shortly after he wrote that in his journal, he died at the hands of the people he was trying to help. But I want to live a life like that. I want to live a life of selfless service, helping other people. Time continued to go by, and one day the prisoners in the law library, they said, "Andrew, you know what you should do? You should apply for what's called a pardon or clemency from the governor." And after all these years in the prison, I never heard anyone talk about that. But they said, "Andrew, you can apply." And I thought to myself, wow, you know what? You know, prisoners cannot get out of prison. There's only one way. Either the courts overturn your sentence, and there was no option for that in my case, or the governor can exercise his option of granting a pardon to a prisoner. But that never happens. It never, never, never happens. Of all the years in prison, I never heard anyone talk about this. But I thought to myself, you know what? So what? I can at least apply. And if I lose, I lose nothing. I'm still where I'm at. But at least I can say I tried. So I filled out my application. And not only that, but I was reading the Bible, and I was so convicted. The more I prayed, the greater the conviction grew, that God wanted me to apply for this clemency, this pardon, and I was going to get it. I was just so certain. So I applied. 2003, you can go home and watch this. It was televised. I was in the prison. My application was sent to Olympia, and it was heard before the governor's clemency and pardons board. This is all video, audio recorded online. And I was not present, but they heard my case, and they said, you know, this young man, he was 16 when he went to prison. He spent 2 years in solitary. He's completed all these classes. You need 90 credits for a 2-year associate's degree. Andrew has completed 250 college level credits. He's done all these things. He's been helping the other prisoners. And they came down to a vote. They said, all those in favor of giving a pardon to Andrew Michelle, say aye. There are 5 members. To win, I need a majority vote, which is 3. Can you guess how many people voted aye on that day? Only 2. I lost by 1 vote. When I got the news in prison, I was both glad and I was sad. I was glad because I got 2 votes. I was so glad. At least I got 2 votes. No one ever gets any votes, but I got 2. And so that was a confirmation I was doing the right thing. But I was somewhat sad because I realized I thought God was going to do something great. I believed that God was going to do all these years. I've been the only prisoner, or at least in my own mind, that's been tithing and giving offerings and keeping the Sabbath and reading the Bible. I thought God was going to honor those who honor Him. What happened? Is it only me? Or are there other people here tonight that you have been praying to God, or you have prayed to God about something for many, many, many years, and God did not answer the way you wanted Him to at the time you wanted Him to do it? Am I the only one, or is there other people here that have had that tonight? Oh, yeah, so there are other people. But I realized, you know, even though God didn't answer my prayer, what am I going to do? Am I going to stop being, am I going to be unfaithful? I realized the words of Peter. He said, "Jesus, to where else can I go? There's nowhere else to go." And so I realized, even if I'm going to stay in prison, I'm going to remain faithful to God. A few months later, April 2004, I was writing in my journal. I used to write all sorts of crazy things in my journal. Don't ask me where they came from, but whenever I read the Bible, I just kept having these convictions. One day, I'm going to go to Venezuela. I don't know where Venezuela's at. One day, I'm going to go to Thailand. I don't know where Thailand's at. One day, I'm going to speak Spanish. And I would write all these things in my journal. And then I wrote there in the bottom of my journal, I don't know why, but April 12th, 2004, one day the governor or the government is going to realize lives, they're going to realize what God has been doing in my life, and they're going to grant me a pardon. They're going to grant me a commutation. I could not explain it, but somehow I just knew that somehow God was going to work in my life, and I was still going to get a pardon. I never shared that with anyone in the prison because they would think that you are, and you were qualified for certain pills. But I really believed it. And I don't know how to explain it, but exactly 10 months to the day, January 12th, 2005, I was sitting in my cell, McNeil Island, just a few miles from here as the bird flies, E-unit, fourth tier, cell 405. And I was sitting in the cell, and there was a stack of books there, and I was reading as usual. My cellmates were there smoking cigarettes and watching TV as usual. And all of a sudden, something happened I never could have imagined. The prison guards ran up to my cell. They banged on the door and said, "Prisoner Mitchell." I said, "Yes." They said, "You need to go to the administration building right now." And that's always bad news. And so I thought, what did I do wrong? I didn't do anything wrong. But in prison, you can get in trouble for doing something, even if you didn't do it, because you live with thousands of other guilty prisoners. And so I thought, what did I do wrong? The prisoners next to me in my cell, they said, "Andrew, what did you do wrong? You don't even drink coffee," because I learned about the health message. You know, when we live better, when we're healthier, we can serve God better. And so I wanted to be healthier. And so they said, "But you need to go to the administration or you're in trouble." So I walked down to the administration building. I opened the door. I walked in, and there was this long hallway. And at the end of the hallway were the prison director and the warden. And they came running down towards me, and he came up to me, and he put his finger in my face. And this is what he said, word for word. "Are you Andrew Mitchell?" I said, "Yes. We don't know who you are, and we don't know who you know, but we just received an order from Governor Gary Locke's office to release you immediately." They stood there looking at me like I was a man from the moon. They said, "You need to go back up to your cell and pack up your stuff because you're being released right now." January 11th, 2005 was the last day in office for Governor Gary Locke, the first Chinese-American governor, who later became the ambassador from the U.S. to China. On his last day in office, for reasons I do not know today, I do not know, I can only speculate, on his last day in office, he overturned the judge's decisions and the people who were on the clemency board. He overturned their decision and set me free. He had heard a story somehow, some way, of a young person that didn't follow biblical counsel or didn't even know it, made bad decisions, was in prison, but he picked up this Bible, and the Bible changed his life so much, he started contributing to the world around him, helping other people, and because of this example, I speculate, he overturned the sentence and set me free. I went to prison in 1995. It's January 2005. Almost 10 years in prison. I go home, my mom comes to pick me up, everyone else has passed away. I go home for the first time. I remember walking into my house. Can you guess what was the first thing I did when I went home after 10 years in prison? I prayed. I walked into my bedroom. I remember I shut the door and I listened, and it was so quiet. In prison, there's all these TVs going and radios going and people yelling, slamming doors and bells and whistles, and it's just all, there's no quiet. It's always distraction. And my favorite time in the morning was to get up when it was so quiet and the other prisoners were asleep, and to open this Bible, to read it, and to pray about what I was reading. And now I realized I'm free. I can pray at 3 a.m. I can pray at 3 p.m. I can pray at 9 p.m. I can pray whenever I want, as loud as I want, and no one's going to stop me. It was so wonderful. I continued to pray, and I thought, the Adventists, the Seventh-day Adventists, I've got to find these people. So I looked up in the phone book. I found the Seventh-day Adventist Church. There was one in Puyallup. I'd never even heard of these people. I called up, and like a good prisoner, I asked for permission to go to the church. And so I called, and they said, "Sure, you can come to our church." So I remember I went down to the Puyallup Adventist Church. I walked there. It was some things you remember so clearly. It was a drizzly, overcast, cloudy day. I walked into the church door. I opened it, and I remember I stepped over the threshold slowly, and the door shut, and I remember thinking, wow, I'm in God's church with God's people on God's day reading from God's book. This is so wonderful. There was a pastor that came up to me and he said, "Hi, how are you? Welcome to our church. Are you a visitor?" Now, there's no way for me to describe it. I cannot begin to describe it. You'll just have to take my words for it. I felt like a Martian. I felt like a man from the moon. I was in such a state of panic, and it felt so weird to be free. It felt so weird to adjust to free society. And I could explain that more, but I don't have time. But the pastor came up to me, and I felt like I had this big sign stamped on my forehead, and he knew everything. So this is exactly what I said, word to word, to the Puyallup pastor at that time. I'm going to say it to you the same way he said it to me. He said, "Hi, welcome to our church. Can I help? Where are you from?" And the first thing I said, I just blurted out, "I just got out of prison. I've been in prison for 10 years. I've been in prison since I was 16 years old. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. Please just show me a seat where I can sit down. I promise I won't bother anyone. I just want to hear people study the Bible." And I just blurted it out like that. And the pastor said, "Oh, well, great. Well, we're glad you're here. Please, maybe you can go to the young adult Sabbath school." So I went to the young adult Sabbath school, and the people in the church are so friendly and loving. And he came up there, the elder Tom Emery, he held out his hand and shook my hand. And I was so early. I wanted to be early because I wanted to get good seats. I thought that was really important. And so he said, "Where are you from? How'd you find our Sabbath school?" And I just blurted out, "I just got out of prison. I've been in prison for 10 years. Been in prison since I was 16. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. Please just show me where to sit down. I won't bother anyone. I just want to hear people study the Bible." And I think an angel covered his ear somehow, because he said, "Oh, great. Well, we're glad you're here. Go ahead and sit down. Everyone will be here in a few more minutes." And so it was so wonderful. And after that, I just kept my mouth shut. I didn't tell anyone where I had been or what I had been doing. People would ask me, "Where are you from?" And I would just say, "You know, I left home when I was 16, and I've moved around a lot, and I've done different jobs and gone to school part-time. And just recently, I quit my job and moved back in with my mom. And so I thought, people don't want to know I was in prison. I don't want to freak people out, and people don't want to know." And I would go to church, and it was so wonderful. But as time went by, I really loved going to church, but I just wanted to do more. I just can't sit here in a pew 1 hour a week. I want to do more. What can I do? And I thought, but I'm a high school dropout, drug addict, felon. Can God use someone like me? Have you ever thought to yourself, I'm limited because of XYZ? I'm too poor. I'm too rich. I'm not educated. I'm too smart. I can't live for God. Well, the Bible says, Matthew 24:14, this is one of just many wonderful verses. Jesus said something very interesting, talking about the end times. He said, "This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in how much of the world? All the world, as a witness to all nations." And then what will happen? The end will come. Now, do you look forward to this end coming? Yes or no? Yes, of course, we want Jesus to come back. Therefore, we should be very interested in taking the gospel to all the world, especially the areas of the world where the Hindus, the Buddhists, and Muslims, there are no Christians there. And so I thought, what can I do? And again, as I learned in solitary confinement, and as I'll explain again, I prayed, "Lord, what can I do?" And God opened a little door. "Andrew, go feed the homeless in Tacoma." And I went to feed the homeless in Tacoma, and then God opened bigger doors. I got invited to a three-week mission trip, a short-term mission trip in Mexico, to go to volunteer to orphanage. And then after a few weeks, the pastor said, "Hey, you did so well on a trip. Would you like to join some students at an Adventist school going to Venezuela for 2 months? I said, "Sure," because I wrote that in my journal, remember? So I went to Venezuela for 2 months. I had to learn some Spanish. After 2 months in Venezuela, helping with youth outreach and building some churches, they said, "We need a teacher at an Adventist school in Costa Rica." So I went to Costa Rica, and I was there teaching Bible classes and English classes to kids there in Costa Rica. And after 6 months there, I prayed, "God, so you can see, feeding the homeless in Tacoma, 3 weeks in Mexico, 2 weeks in Venezuela, 6 months in Costa Rica. God, what's next?" I got invited to go to Thailand for another, it was 6 months to do outreach there at the refugee camp and the orphanage and prisons and many different projects working with the Buddhist people. And after 6 months, they said, "You can't leave. We need you here. The girls at the orphanage love you. The prisoners love you. You've got to stay here. Everyone wants you to stay." 6 months turned into 5 years. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute, but I want to be a realist. I know that you are real people, and you have real challenges, and you have family members. You probably know people in your neighborhood or family that made bad decisions, and they've gone to jail. Maybe people here tonight have been to jail. And you know what? People sometimes just do the craziest things. They commit terrible crimes, they go to prison, then they get out, and then what do? They go back to prison! I remember being in prison for 10 years. There was this one guy, he had no teeth. Everyone called him Gummy, and he was a drug addict. He got released and went back 5 times during the 10 years in prison. And I remember thinking, this is so crazy. Why would someone get freedom and then go back to the prison? But I want to be honest with you tonight, and I want to be transparent. Getting out of prison and adjusting to society was very difficult. It was not easy. There were many, many, many challenges, some which will never go away. And, you know, there was a point in my life when I realized, you know what, and I made some decisions, and those decisions led me back to prison. I went back to jail. Can you guess why I went back to jail? Well, one day I got this phone call and they said, we're here at the local community college, Pierce College, which had sponsored all the educational programs at McNeil. They said, you were the prisoner that took all of our classes and then you took some of them over and over again just to keep learning. They said, we heard you got out of prison, you're doing all this mission work and helping all these other people. Will you come back to McNeil Island Prison and will you speak to the prisoners at the graduation? I said, sure. So praise God, I went back to jail, not for committing a crime, and I was there. And there's the prisoners looking at me going, he looks like, and I stood up and said, yes, it is me. It's Andrew Mitchell, Andrew Michelle. Let me tell you what God has done in my life. And then I began to share with them, and it was so wonderful. And since that time, God has opened opportunities for me to go back to prison. Not that once, but just a few months ago, last year, I was in a maximum security prison outside of Nairobi, Kenya. And I was speaking to prisoners in a prison, and they have no shoes, no soap, no toilet paper, and someone dies in that prison every week just from drinking the water. But I shared with those men what I share with you tonight. Doesn't matter whether you're in prison or out. God can change anyone's life. If you seek God with prayer, especially prayer and fasting, God will act. God will give you souls. He'll give you opportunities to share if you seek Him, if you spend time with Him. All I shared with them was this. Kwa binadamu, jambo hili halawezekani, lakini kwa Mungu, mambo yote huwezekana. Matthew 19:26. What is impossible with men is possible with God. And as I shared with those prisoners, a man stood up at the back and he said, I've committed so many robberies, so many rapes, so many murders, I cannot even remember all my victims. And I'm going to be spending many, many years in prison. But if God can change someone's life like Andrew's, then I want God to change my life as well. Do you think it's worthwhile to go to a prison and to share a message of hope with these prisoners and to see them make a decision like that? I'll finish with one story. I was in Costa Rica. I was there with another Bible worker. He used to be a pot-smoking snowboarder, and he had read the Bible, and God changed his life. So now we're there in Costa Rica doing Bible classes, working not only teaching at the school as volunteers, but also in the community, trying to reach out in the community and do Bible studies. But after a while, it started to dry up, the opportunities, a lot of closed doors. And so what we did is we spent time praying and fasting. What we did is one day, I think it was like a Tuesday, we did not eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And on the next day, we skipped breakfast and lunch. And we just prayed. We just spent time reading the Bible and praying. And we were praying, God, if you want to, please let us share with the whole country. We just want you, God, to open doors so that we can talk about you. We love doing this. And then so while we were praying, I got this crazy radical idea. I heard a voice in my head. And so the voice in my head said, Andrew, you should share your testimony on every television station in Costa Rica. And so I thought, that's probably not a good voice to listen to. But I prayed about it and I shared it with my friend. He said, you know what? Let's pray about it. And he said, well, let's do that. Let's send an email with your short testimony to the TV stations and just see what happens. So he sent the email. We got an email right back. We're sending a television crew up to the mountains in Monteverde, Costa Rica, to do an interview with this guy. So they came up to do the interview. And when they were in such a rush to interview me, we started to get scared. We were a little bit worried. Why are they in such a hurry to hear my story? Maybe they'll use it to create like some terrible drama or to make it sound really bad. So they came up to interview me, and I didn't know a lot of Spanish, but I knew enough that every question they would ask me, I would answer from the Bible. Why are you here? The Bible says. What are you doing? The Bible says. What happened in your life? The Bible says. That way, no matter how they edit the video, it's always going to show the Bible. Well, at least I hope so. Well, so they answered that. The next morning, I was sleeping, and I was living in the community with a student who was poor, and so they let me sleep in the house, and it was also good food. And so I woke up at 5 in the morning. The mom came, barged into the bedroom, grabbed me while sleeping, said, levántate, mira la televisión, wake up, look at the television. And I looked at the television, and there was my face on the TV, and it was a commercial, and this is what it said in Spanish. Are there Spanish speakers here? It said this in Spanish. I'll translate. It said, Secuestradora, il satante de los Estados Unidos se esconde en las montañas de nuestro país. Which translated is, armed and dangerous kidnapper and robber from the United States is hiding. Se esconde en los montañas, in the mountains of our country. Tune in tonight at 8, a las 8, a special program. And so I thought, this is terrible. Can you imagine if you're a mother or a father of a little boy or girl, you're sending them to the wonderful Adventist school, and that nice American missionary teacher that's been teaching your kid Bible classes. He's an armed and dangerous kidnapper. And so the teachers and everyone were so worried. But that night, we were praying all day long. That night, the program came on and said, up next, up next, up next. And they dragged out the program till 8:52 that night. At 9 p.m. on that channel was the finale for Latin American Idol. All of Costa Rica tunes in to watch the finale. They held my interview to the last minute. And these two women came on, the narrators. This is public television. Informe Once was the channel. And they came on, they said, you know, and they started to show, play all this boom, 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 this dramatic music. They showed prison riots and prison fights and this terrible car chase. And they said, he was in prison and kidnapping, robbery, secuestradora, y asaltante, all these things. And they said, but we went to the mountains. We found him in the school. And this is what he's doing. The film cut away and it showed me in class teaching the kids. Jesus loves me, this I know. And it was so wonderful. And then they began to let me share, and I shared on national television what reading the Bible had done for my life and what reading the Bible could do for other people's lives. It was so wonderful. I was sitting there in the house, jumping up and down. God, just one day and a half of prayer and fasting opened an opportunity to share with the whole country. The next day, we were walking around in the community. Everyone was thanking me. Thank you for sharing the story. Policeman, when I was walking in the capital, San Jose, a policeman ran up to me and he said, hey, I know who you are. And if you've ever been a criminal, that's not good news. He said, the police officer, I know who you are. And I said, you know what? He said, you know, my family was watching your story the other night and it was so wonderful. You were such an inspiration to my kids. They want to read more about the Bible. And it was so wonderful. But just spending that time in prayer and fasting, from the beginning, I learned there in solitary confinement, if you just pick up this Bible and you read and you pray about what you read and you seek God and you spend time undistracted with food or TV or anything, if you spend time seeking God, He will open doors for you to share and to serve other people. Those doors may be very small, but I can tell you, seize those little opportunities because He will give you greater and greater and greater doors. I want to finish with this last thought. What do I want to do with my life now? I'm married now. That's a whole nother story. And I'm living in the Philippines now. I go to prison every Sabbath now to share with the prisoners there in the Philippines. And my wife is doing her residency, and after 4 years, we're going to go do more missionary work with the Hindus or the Buddhists or the Muslims. There's so many people in the world that have never heard of Jesus, and we want to live our life sharing with other people. My life goal is that when I die, I want to die sharing Jesus with the Hindus, the Buddhists, and the Muslims. If God can use a high school dropout, drug addict, felon, how much easier is it for God to work in your life? I encourage you, spend time in the Bible, read the Bible, seek Him, and He will give you those opportunities. Can we bow our heads in a word of prayer? Father in heaven, we just thank You so much tonight for reminding us that all things are possible with You. You've given us so many invitations to spend time with You in Your Word, and I pray that as this Word has been a blessing to me, that it will bless everyone here tonight, and that You will in turn not only bless their family, but their friends and neighborhoods, their counties and their countries, wherever they will go from this point. Use them, Heavenly Father, and I pray that every person in here will leave here with an insatiable desire and a hunger to know You better, not to listen to someone else's testimonies, but to know You so well they will have their own testimonies, and they in turn will bless other people. In Jesus' wonderful name, amen.